kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Dad's Army Podcast. Today is Saturday the 4th of August, 2007.
In a moment, we'll be heading over to the Dad's Army newsroom to see what's new in the world of Dad's Army.
We then welcome back Ella Driscoll to the podcast and catch up on the latest developments with the Dad's Army stage play.
And then we move into our discussion of our featured episode this week, which is the season 4 episode called Boots, Boots, Boots.
Good evening, Tony. How are you doing?
James, I'm fine. How are you doing?
Not bad, thanks. Not bad.
We've got some news items, I believe, and you've got the items.
Yeah, first of all, one of the items you mentioned last podcast, BBC 7 are putting the old Dad's Army radio shows out every Friday at various times.
Yep.
We've received an email from Carl Hinton. Just a quick note to say that I have listened to all of your podcasts so far and how much I am enjoying them. Your listeners might not be aware that BBC Radio 7 are running all of the old Dad's Army radio broadcasts each Friday. These are downloadable from their Listen Again site. Thanks, Carl, for getting in touch and sending us the information. Tony?
James, you're going to put a link on the website so people can go to the BBC site, the right part of the BBC website, and also just a note to point out that people can listen to it when it's being broadcast on BBC 7, which is a digital radio station which people can pick up on their Freeview boxes or Sky or satellite TVs or in fact their digital radios.
Last Friday, so that's yesterday, they broadcast Sergeant Save My Boy, and the week before that there was Boots, 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 and it is a really good way of just of listening to the radio shows without actually having to purchase the CDs.
All right.
Moving on, what else have we got in the news bag, Tony?
Well, we've also got to mention the stage play again. You, James, you've interviewed Ella Driscoll for a second time, and about 15 or 16 people sent in questions, and we've got some of the answers to those questions that Ed kindly gave us during the interview.
Yeah, indeed. We had a fantastic response to the announcement I put out a couple of weeks ago, so thank you to everyone who sent in questions to Ed, and I'm glad to say that he answered everyone, and that interview's coming up shortly.
Brilliant. And you've also got a story about Bristol City.
Yeah, this is akin to one of those things you see on the news, you know, when you get the "and finally" kind of silly stories where, you know, someone's seen a dog flying past a window or something. This isn't as crazy as that, but it is funny, I think, sometimes, Tony, how Dad's Army crops up in everyday life when you don't expect it. And in my searches on the internet to find some new Dad's Army news, I came across Bristol City Football Club's website, and there's a news article, and they've just signed a couple of players who I haven't heard of, so if you're a Bristol City fan, I'm sorry, but I don't know much about your club, but I do know that you signed a couple of players. And I read the article to you, Tony, and see what you think. Gary Johnson quipped that re-signing Scott Murray and Alex Russell for another season was like clinching deals with members of Dad's Army. The City boss was delighted to see Scott and Alex pen contract extensions in the past 48 hours and joked, "It's a little like signing Captain Mannerin and Pike." He was, of course, referring to the ages of his renewing midfield duo, a combined 67, with Scott 33 and Alex 34. The City boss, Smith, says, "Both were very much part of our promotion team and fully deserve their new contracts. When you get to the Dad's Army stage, and they won't mind me saying that, you do tend to go on a year-by-year basis." So, funny, isn't it? I mean, it's how someone decides to look at new footballers or and compare them to middle-aged soldiers from a programme. So I'll put the link on our website so that listeners can go and check and have a look at that website for themselves.
Brilliant.
One final piece of news that I will mention that I stumbled upon, again, quite by accident, Tony, was an interview with Colin Bean.
Who interviewed him?
I'm not entirely certain who interviewed him. It looks like a fairly... it looks like an amateur recording. It's on the YouTube site, and again, I'll put a link to this on our website. But Colin Bean, for those of you who don't know who we're talking about, played Private Sponge, who was a semi-regular extra in the series, and he's got a fantastic way of recording his time when he's interviewed. And there are two videos on YouTube. which feature Colin, and I think it's well worth having a listen, because he tells his stories extremely articulately, and they're very funny.
How do you get to do that? How do you get to listen?
Again, you can just go on to www.youtube.com and then just search for Dad's Army, and you get lots of results. And the title, I think, is Colin Bean Interview. It was posted on YouTube October 2006, which is why it's not new new news. if you understand what I'm saying there, but it's well worth going and have a look and just listening to what he's got to say. Okay, so moving on, we'll move swiftly into the next part of our podcast this week, which is our interview with Ed about the forthcoming Dad's Army stage play. I have great pleasure in welcoming back the producer of the Dad's Army stage play, Mr. Ed O'Driscoll. Morning, Ed. How are you doing?
Morning, James. I'm fine.
Great to have you back on the show. Thanks ever so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak to us again.
That's a pleasure.
Ever since we knew you were coming back on the show, listeners have been emailing their questions for me to put to you, and we've had a really good response. So it shows that there's a real interest in the show. But before we get back into those questions, perhaps I could ask you if there's been any developments you can share with us.
Well, it looks like the tour is extending into next year, to coincide with the 40th anniversary, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's looking like we're going to kick off again in February, possibly at the Hackney Empire, but we have to wait and see.
Oh, wow.
Which would be nice.
Yeah.
And then it looks like we could be doing another 15-16 weeks, provisionally ending at the end of May at the Theatre Royal up in Newcastle, but all this is to be confirmed as yet, so you've got it straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, I think that's fantastic. Presumably it's because ticket sales have been so good for the run that you've already got, that extension seems like a natural and sensible way forward.
It's encouraging, let's put it that way, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll move into the questions that listeners have sent in.
Okay.
By far the most popular question, I mean, this came in from Roland Jones of Coventry, Steve Hiley from Salisbury, Ken Baxter of Oxford, Michael Phelps of Bookham, Keith Farley and Karen Jones, who don't mention where they're from, but they all ask the same question, and that's who has been cast for the role of Private Pike?
Okay, well, we've got a young, very talented actor who's just coming out of the Mousetrap. He's been playing in the West End, and his name's Tom Richardson. And I think people will be very pleasantly surprised. He's very talented and he's very enthusiastic and really looking forward to it.
I understand from a conversation we had before we started recording, Ed, that Tom has actually met with Ian Lavender to discuss.
Yeah, Ian kindly agreed to meet with Tom, and they went and had a chat. Sally Vaughan, our casting director, went up with Tom, and they had a nice discussion and conversation about it, so he's been getting a bit of tips from the master himself, so yes, absolutely.
No, I think it's, in particular the Deadly Attachment, Pike sets up the classic line, don't tell him Pike, and people have been really interested to find out which actor is going to set Menorin up for that. Yeah.
Well, I think he'll be good. I think he'll be very good indeed.
Richard N. Tudor, I think I'm saying your surname right there, Richard, he's from Liverpool, and he wants to know whether you're able to let us know who's been cast in the role of Warden Hodges.
That's an experienced actor called Martin Carroll. Martin, he's got a great look about him. I think people will be, we'll see where we cast him. He's again very talented, and we're very enthusiastic. I think it's going to be, he's going to be perfect in the role.
Terrific. Okay. I mean, Richard actually asked three questions.
Okay.
The second question was, what do Bill Pertwee, Clive Dunn, and Ian Lavender, and you touched on this earlier, make of the resurrection of the characters they turned into household names?
Well, I mean, we've only had positive comments. I mean, we've only really discussed it, or it's been approached Ian, when he met with Tom. But we've had no negativity, and certainly Jimmy and David have been extremely enthusiastic. So, I mean, I think we're all aware we've got our work cut out, but we're trying very, very hard to capture something from the original.
That was terrific. I hope that answers your question there, Richard. Two questions from the other side of the world. Chuck called David Tuttle, and another guy called Lance Meredith from Sydney and Melbourne, respectively, want to know whether you have any plans to take the play to Australia.
Not at this stage, but we're open to offers. So it's just something that we've thought about. I think we need to see where this takes us initially. We've got 30 weeks on the road, which is a long time. Let's see how that pans out, and if it's a success and we feel that it's got legs, then who knows?
Yes, Dead Slime has always been extremely popular in New Zealand and Australia as well. I mean, we've got a number of listeners for the podcast from Australia, so it's good to know that there's interest in your show, even if it's a little bit of jealousy. Yeah, it's great. Paul Smith and a chap called Vincent Bowker, who's from South Africa, has sent this message in. James Beck was far younger when he played Private Walker than Leslie Grantham is now. Do you have any concerns about Grantham's ability to portray Walker?
I have to say, just wait till you see him in costume. He looks fantastic.
No, I'm sure.
He really does. So I think that will allay any fears.
I mean, that was quite a common discussion on some of the forums. But I think, to my mind, if you look at the way Leslie Grantham's face is, and then you try and mirror the facial movements that James Beck had, I can see it. I can really see it in Leslie Grantham. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to portray the role.
He's really looking forward to it, Leslie. And We found the right moustache for him and everything. He looks $1 million.
Jeremy Arnott, again, Jeremy doesn't say where he's from, but his question is, if the show is a success, would you consider changing the episodes?
Oh, who knows? Who knows at this stage? If it's a rip-roaring success, then maybe we could. I know that when I first spoke to David, he said, we've got 80 of them, you can do put three a year for the next 20, 30 years. I think they were very keen, but we'll wait and see. Let's get this one up and running first, and as I say, see where it takes us.
Good idea. Yeah. Bruce Smidley from London. How do you plan to tackle Walker's smoking habit in the light of the recent smoking ban on smoking in enclosed public places?
Well, I have it on very good authority that in a theatrical place, if smoking is essential to the script, then there is a clause that allows it to take place. So we will be finding a way of getting around that.
Yeah, I can't really see Walker without a cigarette. It's
absolutely
it would be extremely difficult, I think.
It's most definitely essential to the plot.
I would say so. This is from a lady called Sarah Caliber, spelled slightly different from your production company, her comments are a great name for a production company. Mm-hmm. When can we expect to see the publicity shots of the cast in uniform you mentioned on the Stage So special when you were on the podcast a few weeks ago?
Yes, good question. Well, they'll be in uniform. The photographer's coming to the dress rehearsal first week of September, and then I'll arrange to get some of the pictures put up on our website.
Super.
And that's www.caliberproductions, C-A-L-I-B-R-E, productions, all one word, .co.uk.
Great, and I'll make sure there's a link to your website on our website as well. So listeners can go directly to your website. It's also got all of the tour dates on it as well, hasn't it?
With links to the theatres. And as soon as we've confirmed all the dates in the spring season, they'll be going up there first. So
terrific.
See what's happening in the spring.
Okay. Well, lastly there, just one more question from a chap called Donald Dickinson. Will the play be being filmed?
No, we don't have a license to do that.
Right, so okay.
We don't want to touch on the integrity of the original series as far as filming is concerned.
That's great. Well, thank you very much indeed, Ed, for coming on and answering those questions. I think the questions that come from the listeners are always more interesting than the ones that just one or two people have come up with. So,
absolutely.
So thanks ever so much for coming on, and we'll speak to you again in the future.
My pleasure. Keep up the good work, James.
Thanks very much, Ed.
Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Look, we can't have one rule for some and another rule for others.
I see. Well, in that case, sir, who's going to inspect your feet?
Yes, well, I see your point, Wilson. Look, I'll tell you what. I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours.
Well, that was a clip from this week's featured episode, Boots, Boots, Boots. James, I'll tell you what I think about this episode, if you tell me what you think about this episode.
Yeah, okay. After you.
Well, we'll score it at the end, but I've just picked out a few bits that made me laugh. There's the bit right at the start when Mannering's inspecting everyone's feet, and Godfrey can't lift his feet up high enough to have him inspected. And Mannering, I think, commands them to get a chair over so that Godfrey can put his foot up on it. But instead of doing that, Godfrey sits on it. And it's just Godfrey's face when he sits on the chair.
Yes.
And Mannering getting cross with him.
Yep.
Love that bit.
Have you noticed a lot of the good, a lot of the really funny points that Godfrey is involved in has got nothing to do with what he says? It's all visual.
Well, there's another bit later on. He's very good at looking hurt, looking offended, I think, and he's got that down to a T. When he cracks a joke, Godfrey cracks a joke about Jonesy bathing his feet in tea, and Mannering says, "Don't be insolent, Godfrey." And just Godfrey looks absolutely offended and confused.
I know. I'm not so sure whether Godfrey's actually cracking a joke then. I think he's genuinely interested in whether or not Jones bathed his feet in Indian or China tea, and Mannering's assuming that he's being sarcastic when he's not.
Oh, I see. I thought perhaps he was being insolent, but I'll have to watch that again.
I can't see Godfrey being insolent on purpose. It's not. He's not within him. He's just a big teddy bear, isn't he?
I've got another bit the clip was very close to this bit, which is where Mannering and Wilson are inspecting each other's feet prior to them going out and inspecting the platoon's feet, and they're inspecting each other's feet in what looks like rather an intimate pose when Jonesy walks in. And
yes.
I love that, just because Jonesy isn't quite sure what they're doing, and can you blame him?
Well, no, I'm not quite sure what you'd assume was going on there, but it does. That particular scene works quite well, certainly. And I actually like the setup to that scene, and obviously that was part of what we played in, played into this part of the podcast with, is where Mannering is basically trying to tell Wilson to take his shoes and socks off, and of course this doesn't sit well with Wilson. And I like the interplay whereby he's going, oh, come on, Wilson, come on, it's only me. And I think, I mean, maybe it's just a reflection of the times we live in, but that almost now, that comes across as quite creepy, I think.
Yes.
You know, who is his, come on, show me your feet. You know, or words to that effect. And I think the point you mentioned, whereby they do end up in the innocent pose where they're grabbing each other's knee, you know, it's just a clever little scene, and it's well worked with the three main characters. Yeah,
there's a few favourite bits in the episode. That's certainly one of them, because of all the marching they're doing. Obviously Pike, their feet suffer a bit, and Pike has a nightmare. And is it possible to show to play a little clip from that scene?
Yes, I can, although this is coming from the radio show rather than the TV show. And those of you who are familiar with both formats, see if you can spot the difference.
Mum? Mum! Mum!
What on earth's the matter, Frank?
Oh, one glass.
Hmm?
Oh, what are you doing here? I thought you'd gone home long ago.
Yes, well, never mind that now.
Okay, that scene, which again is to me is quite memorable from the TV version. The major difference, of course, Tony is the person who comes to see Pike after he's had his nightmare.
Now Pike's expecting Mum to come in the door, isn't he? But
Sergeant Wilson comes in, and of course, obviously, there's practical reasons for this when they're recording the radio show. Mainly, obviously, I think Janet Davis wasn't available at that point. And
I didn't know that. Oh, I see.
I'm assuming that's what it was, because Janet Davis does appear in radio plays. So
I see. Yes.
And also, I mean, this is just one of the areas that I wanted to mention, because the radio script is quite a dramatic departure from the TV script here, and there's two reasons. I think one, because all of Walker's lines are not dropped; they are given to other members of the cast. You know, where it's appropriate, they're filtered out to Pike and Fraser, and Mrs. Pike, who did form that, who did play a part in that middle scene in the episode about Pike's deformed feet, doesn't appear in a radio play. And I like it because they write a brand new part of the radio play whereby Wilson is trying to explain to Pike what he's actually doing there. You know, I mean, Pike's first reaction is, "Oh, Uncle Wilson, Uncle Arthur, why are you here?" And that's new jokes, and I think that's what works well in the radio show. And I think the reason why that is particularly prominent in this radio episode is because the TV episode relied an awful lot on visual humour. I would say far more than usual in this episode. If you think about the sessions where they're running off doing the feet hardening, as Mannering calls it, the football, the running on the beach, you know, the sharp shells digging into their feet, and one part that I find particularly funny, where Mannering falls in the
hole
when they're marching in the sea, all of that can't transfer really well to radio. They have a go with the beach, and they have a go with the football, but of course you can't spend so long on that when you're relying on the audio for them.
Yeah, and I think the radio and the TV on this occasion are equally good, very different, but equally good. I've said often the radio, I think, sometimes managed to improve the humour a bit, but on this one, they're both superb, but very different.
Yep, I would go along with that. I would say, I mean, I've mentioned a few times that I do prefer, in general, the radio shows. I think that's because that's just me. I much prefer audio humour with words rather than slapstick. But I do appreciate both episodes here. Moving on slightly, one of the things I'll mention before we get too far through the episode was, you know, right at the very beginning of the episode, Tony, where Mannering's got these little sheets or the diagrams.
Yes.
With the feet, with the Royal Army,
yes,
Medical Corps, yeah.
I can picture them.
Okay, metatarsal, right, that was a word used in this episode in both TV and radio formats, and of course, that's actually, well, it was a good few years ago now, an extremely common word in the English language, and could you remember why?
Is it anything to do with David Beckham?
You got it, yeah, it is, absolutely. I remember seeing pictures on telly of the bone structure of the foot, and what the metatarsal is.
I think everyone thought that our World Cup chances rested on this metatarsal, didn't it?
Absolutely, and Jimmy Perry and David Croft had already written that into their series. So when I heard it again, and I thought, that sounds familiar, and of course it was Mr Beckham's foot.
Am I metatarsals all right, James?
I have no idea, and I have no intention of looking at them either, but thank you for asking. Anyway, moving on, Tony.
Now I do want to move on. So, just going back a step, waking up screaming in the night. In the TV version, this is a bit of another reminiscence, I'm afraid, but in the TV version, Mrs. Pike is telling Arthur about Pike waking up screaming, and Arthur says, "I didn't hear it." And just, it's Mrs. Pike's reaction to that, telling Arthur to keep quiet about it. It's just brilliant.
I know, she says the word Arthur quite loudly through clenched teeth.
That's it.
And it's a face. It's a face. And it's the way, I mean, if you had other actors, or actors who weren't so capable of bringing this dialogue to life, I just don't think it would be as funny. And I think that particular gag is like, oh, you know, don't tell the son, don't let him know. You know, it's been done in so many different ways in the past, and it's just not funny. But with Janet Davis and John Le Mesurier in that scenario, it really does work. It makes you smile. So I'm with you there. I completely agree. But sure. I'm a big fan of Mrs. Pike anyway, I have to say.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Yeah. Let's move on to the shoe shop scene then. I've noticed in the scripts we've got a stuntman in this episode, Johnny Scripps, and I've tried to think, where on earth is this stuntman used in the scripts? And the only thing I can think of is in the shoe shop, climbing on this ladder with wheels on. Can you think of anywhere else where a stuntman is used?
No, that's news to me. I remember a part where Ian Lavender, as I thought it was, climbed up those stairs and then did a virtual star with his arms and legs. And I suppose if that was done badly, that could be dangerous.
Or it could be Mannering falling down the hole, or was that Mannering? I'm just trying to think where on earth stuntman was used.
I honestly have no idea there. I mean, if anyone else has got an idea out there, then please email us in. Usually email address, warmingtononc333 at yahoo.co.uk. Just getting it in again there. but no, I can't think of any other area there. As I said, perhaps one of our one of our listeners may be able to pick up on that.
Yeah. The question I've got, actually, for you here, James, does the plot make complete sense to you? Obviously, they're messing about with different sized shoes to try and give Mannering a smaller. Mm. Now, they both... What is the point of both sections from the platoon trying to change his shoes? Because at the end of the episode, the shoe shop man turns up with his pair especially for him. So why are they both... In the radio play, they explain it away. One part of the platoon changed it for a size smaller, and then the other half mistakenly change it back up to its right size again. Mm. How does this work in the TV version?
I know what you mean. I think it does work, but it's not immediately obvious, and I think this is where you just enjoy the slapstick comedy in the shoe shop a little bit, with all the boxes flying everywhere, and Pike going up and down the ladder. In terms of how it actually works, I think it's a case of the two different parts of the platoon. You've got Pike and Wilson going off and doing exactly the same thing as Fraser, Walker and Godfrey, but they don't communicate to each other. They both don't know what's going on. And they just want to change... They've got the same intention of just changing over Mannering's shoes for a size smaller. That's all it is. Hence the reason why at the end of the episode you've got Wilson and Walker both with identical dressings on their foreheads where they've cracked...
Yes.
Where they've bashed their heads on Mannering's...
low door.
Air shelter, yeah, door. So I do think it makes sense. What I think delays it or makes it a bit confusing is that the first time you see that scene, they're completely unaware of what size Mannering's foot is, and I just thought that was a little bit silly. If I'm being really critical, I could call it slightly lazy writing, because it's just a way to try and extend and prolong that scene. And I think if they've gone to all the trouble, the characters have gone to the trouble to come up with this plan, at some point one of them would have thought, well, we really ought to know what size Mannering's shoe is. And of course Pike and Wilson don't make that mistake. They already know what size he is.
I think perhaps we're both looking into it perhaps a bit too deeply.
Oh, that's the beauty of the podcast. It allows us to do it.
So, I've got to make a comment about Eric Chitty. Looked him up in the book. This is the shoe shop manager, and I just thought, brilliant acting, very convincing shoe shop manager, despite all of the crazy goings on in his shop. And just mention his name, Eric Chitty. Mm. Thought it was brilliant.
He was in the radio play as well, but he played a slightly more mellow version of Mr. Sedgwick. I think it's Mr. Sedgwick is the character's name. In a radio play than he does in the TV version. And the TV version, he gets, you know, increasingly more irritable, which I think is a perfectly reasonable reaction compared to what's, you know, considering what's going on within his shop. In the radio show, he remains far more amenable and amicable. And if I was in his position, I think I'd have wanted them all out. So,
one of his final reactions when they pay the money, or Fraser pays the money, and they make a bit of a... They're playing on the stereotypical Scotsman, aren't they, with money. I don't make any comment in case anyone is in Scotland listening to this chat. But
no, we have a couple.
careful. But they use the stereotype very well there. I certainly, as an Englishman, found it quite funny. But when they pay the money and they're about to walk away, and the shoe shop says, hang on a minute, what about the coupons? Because of the rationing. And Walker gets out a whole wadge of coupons, and just the shoe shop manager's acting reaction at seeing all those coupons when he's obviously suspecting there's some sort of fraud going on.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant acting.
I think he was a particularly good bit of casting. One of our listeners we mentioned earlier on in the podcast, Carl Hinton, also sent in a message concerning Boots. Although I have to admit, I think you'll be disappointed, Carl, because I don't know the answer to your question. And that's, what do we know why officers have brown boots instead of black boots? I mean, I'm afraid I have to put my hands up and say I've absolutely no idea.
I don't even know if it's true.
No, nor do I. I have to admit, Dad's Army is usually fairly accurate when it actually portrays things like that, or when it states, fact about the war. They are usually accurate, and I think that's out of respect for the seriousness of the scenario they're writing a comedy about. So I would guess that that is actually accurate, and I don't know, perhaps it was just a way of distinguishing officers from other ranks. So, again, perhaps if listeners out there know whether or not it is actually true, as Tony mentioned, or know the real reason, then please get in contact with us. Anything else about this episode? So, Tony, there's one bit which I wanted to discuss.
What have you got to say?
Right, this is the overriding thing, I think. For me, this is the fantastic part, and it's got Pike, Wilson and Sedgwick. And of course, Sedgwick assumes that Frank Pike is Wilson's son.
Yes.
And of course, they both scratch their ear, and you know that's a little bit of visual comedy that, of course, can't come through as well in an audio format. And eventually, Sedgwick says, "Oh, I could have sworn it." And Wilson's quite rude to him. He goes, "Do you mind awfully just going away and getting
going
the boots?
And getting the shoes or the
whatever
boots.
It was?" Yeah, he was quite dismissive, and it was, "I'm not having that conversation with you." And I thought that was excellent. And of course, it was all part of the clever writing to establish Pike as Wilson's son. And it was done very well, and I love those scenes, because there's only, as I said, a handful of those throughout the entire run of Dad's Army, and I love it, and it becomes more and more overt, you know, the further we make our way through the episodes and series.
Yeah, I agree with you there. They're both scratching their ear in an identical fashion.
Yep.
It's superbly done.
It's done ever so well. So, what would you say you would give this out of 5 then, Tony, in terms of a rating?
I can't remember what I've given other episodes, but this is definitely either a 3.5 or a 4.
Ooh, okay, so reasonably high. I would say this is not my favourite episode. It's by far a long way, it's a very long way from my worst episodes, and I'd give this a 4. There are a couple of other episodes that I like a little more, but yeah, I can watch it again and again, and I think it's a really good story. Okay,
enjoyed talking about that. Just a quick reminder of our contact details for the website. First of all, it's www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Good. Okay. And our email address, which is warmington@yahoo.co.uk.
Yeah, that's terrific. Our featured episode for the next podcast is Put That Light Out, as requested by one of our listeners in Australia. That's Paul Thursden. Thanks for your request, Paul. And we should be having a special guest record our conversation about Put That Light Out. So that's something to look forward to. Other than that, then, I think that just about wraps up the podcast for this fortnight. And we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks. We then welcome back Ed O'Driscoll to the podcast and catch up on the latest developments for the Dad's Army stage play.
And then we last time.